morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Chris and we're down here on Bondi Beach and it's a beautiful morning. It's Sunday, you can feel the wind blowing through the microphone. I'm in recovery mode. I've done a couple of huge days of bike riding, so I'm in physical recovery mode, but I'm going riding again in the next hour to do a coaching session with a client on a bike. It's a great opportunity to for the client to get some fresh air, and because bike riding is the perfect thing to do if you want to walk and talk, or ride and talk, I suppose is what's called. So here we are down the beach, and it's again, the wind is just so refreshing and so gorgeous to feel it on your face and feel the sun coming through. I think what I wanted to talk about today is the spirit of the mountain, in terms of what's the difference between being in Sydney and being in the Himalayas. Well, I think there is no difference, and that's a really important thing to get across right from the start. You are where you are. I climbed a mountain in the Himalayas, and I was mentally disheveled at the bottom of the mountain, and I was mentally disheveled at the top. I was the same person no matter where I was, and I learned a pretty hard lesson from that, and that is going somewhere doesn't change things. If you're an asshole at the bottom of the mountain, you're an asshole at the top, and if you're being hard on yourself at the bottom, you're being hard on yourself at the top. If you're depressed at the bottom, you'll be depressed at the top. So, the delusion that changing jobs or changing relationships or changing anything on the outer world is going to change anything on the inner world, that keeps the world going round. But it doesn't work, because your state of mind is your habit. It travels with you everywhere you go. So if you really want to deal with the Himalayan change, you'll recognize a few things. Firstly, whenever we go to the Himalayas, it's for a purpose. We have a mission. We're going somewhere. So every day adds to a continuum, to a journey. And I think one of the things that people seem to overlook in their daily life is having a mini goals and having micro goals, having targets that they really want to set for themselves, and things that are exciting, like the Himalayas. So whether it's a sporting goal or whether it's a business goal or whatever it is, I think those journeys are important. As long as the outcome feels like you've chosen it. If the outcome of all your hard work is covering your bills or surviving or not losing your relationship, I think those outcomes, the way we can voice our targets or our purposes or our reasons for doing things, those can be voiced in the negative, which is avoidance of fear, or they can be voiced in the affirmative, which is in the voice of values. Every human being on earth has a value set, and if you trigger your value set, if you have an ambition that engages your values, you'll feel like it's really worth going through a little bit of a challenge, just like the Himalayas, to get there. Second thing is to realize that doubt and every other emotion is important. Depression or sadness or fear or uncertainty, to go easy on yourself. Now, when we get to the Himalayas and the spirit of the mountains, people get halfway up a hill or halfway up a trip, or they get a bit of diarrhea or something happens along the way, and they're very prone to consider this a sign that they should abandon ship and turn around and go back. I get given the job as a leader of a group going up the Himalayas to determine when it's time for individuals to turn around, in other words, when it's not safe anymore, and when it is safe, and to help them deal with their shit. Now, I've had in that role of responsibility as a leader in leading people into dangerous places, I've had quite serious confrontations with people who believe that they know best when they should turn around, and I have to say to them, look, I'm not there to lasso a person around the neck and tow them up a hill. I'm there to help people who volunteer to move forward to move forward. So I have a philosophy which is called coach them up or coach them out. So coach them up means I need to know when it's healthy and when it's not healthy to proceed. Now, 99% of uncertainty that comes in a Himalayan walk is self-perpetuated doubt. It comes in the form of, gee, I've got a headache, I think it's altitude sickness, or gee whiz, I've got a stone in my shoe, that's a sign to turn around. Oh, gee whiz, I've got, I'm feeling tired, that's a sign to turn around, or gee whiz. And so the multitude of emotions come to the surface in a Himalayan trip that fly in the face of the spirit of the Himalaya. The spirit of the Himalaya is just plod on regardless. It's not, the spirit of the Himalaya is not a Yahoo, whoopee, gee whiz, Tony Robbins, whiz bang, I'm on top of the world experience. The spirit of the Himalayas is a feeling of love for what you're doing. It's a feeling of constancy and steadiness. And it is a beautiful, it puts a smile on your face, but it's a steady smile. It's not an overt, gee whiz, look at me, take a photo, I'm on top of the mountain. It's hard work, just like life. And that hard work can be attractive when we're feeling great and can be unattractive when we're feeling bad. And so it's hard to do good when you don't feel good. And I think that feel-good experience is a state of mind. Now, that state of mind has a lot of variables. On a walk, we have to nourish ourselves. Self-nourishment in a Himalayan trek comes in the form of food, comes in the form of good sleep, and sometimes both are missing because of circumstances. It comes in the form of resting, taking breaks. It comes in the form of wearing the right clothes, wearing the right, having the right support group around you. It comes in many, many forms. But ultimately, the most important part of nourishment is the mental aspect, of self reconciliation. Now, when we're dialoguing with ourselves on a walk, it's very easy for us to say, this is not my mission, I don't really want to do this, I don't want to face this challenge any further. And if that's the case, what we end up with is a sort of a, everything we eat, every rest we have, every stop we have, every drink we take, every conversation we have is laced with poison. Now, so I really do believe, although a lot of people will say it's a very physical experience, the spirit of the mountain, I really do believe it's a totally mental experience, because those who get into a bad mental state stay there. Now, a bad mental state in the spirit of the mountains has two aspects to it. One is the conscious and one is the subconscious. The consciousness of the mental state really drills down to consideration of the subconscious mind, which is what it says. There are thoughts that you don't know you're having, but you're having, and I would mostly refer to them as interpretive. Interpretive thoughts are the thoughts that we have that translate what's going on in front of us, translate it into a thought. So the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, and the senses, the sensory touch, experience the world, bring it in through a filtration process. Once it's in through the filtration process, it becomes a thought. So if you interpret, let's say I tread in a dog poo as I'm walking along the footpath, that can be, damn, I tried in a dog poo walking along the footpath. Sometimes it's just what it is, and we need to clean our shoe up. Or sometimes we've got so much stress and so much feeling of bad luck happening to us and so much distress in our life that we go, oh, there it is again, another bloody disaster happening to poor old idiot me, and we feel disenfranchised, we feel depressed, we feel discombobulated by that dog poop, because it adds another layer, another straw to the camel's back, you know, and eventually that becomes a sense of a state that's behind the state of mind. So quite often when I'm dealing with people who have had a mental health problem or whatever, they deal with the conscious brain. They like to know things, add things up, learn things, put things in books. But what they don't appreciate is that the subconscious is running a script separate to the conscious brain. So the subconscious can be dialoguing and having a great old time, interpretive mind. It's translating what's going on in the world. While the conscious brain is going along going, oh no, I must think positively, I must think cleverly, I must have gratitude, I must know all this information, I must learn the laws of nature, I must do all these things. And so what happens is there's a subconscious, there is even, by learning knowledge, there can be even a greater disconnection from the place from which our state is enabled. Our state is enabled by the subconscious. Now, to this end, we have to appreciate that the subconscious brain can cause us incredible dissatisfaction. The subconscious brain can start to think thoughts that are independent of reality. So here we are sitting on the beach, and I'll give you a great example. Here we are sitting on the beach, and the sun's coming up. It's a little bit cold. So I could sit here and go, oh shit, I've really stuffed up. I haven't worn the right clothes. What an idiot I am. That's a subconscious thought, because it's interpreted. It's taken cold, which is just an event. Taken a simple thing like a bit of cold or a bit of wind in the microphone, and it interprets it and gives it a spin. Now, spinning the subconscious mind, spinning is the art of reprogramming our subconscious to from failure to success, from a sad sack to a happy sack, from a discontented person to a contented person. And to get to the subconscious mind, we need to build sort of like a framework within which it can function. In other words, we need to apply some disciplines. And the subconscious mind is really hard to discipline because it's subconscious, because it's fed by itself. It becomes like a virtual reality, one of those artificial intelligence things. It gathers more information to reinforce its current belief system. So, as I said, if you're a winner and you win a race, you'll interpret the next bit of training as reinforcement of the fact you're a winner because you won the last race. So success breeds success, love breeds love, happiness breeds happiness. But if your paradigm is, oh, I failed last time, or I'm a failure in business, or I'm a failure in relationship, or I'm a failure in life, and you get a bit of information, it feeds the monster. So this subconscious brain is totally, totally reprogrammed. But there are no shortcuts to it. And that's what I want to say mostly about the spirit of the mountain. There is a mountain. There is a walk. There is a vertical sheer face on a mountain. And there are ways around it. At the end of the day, the ways around it and the sheer face end up at the same altitude. So altitude gain is got to be achieved one way or another, through simply the process of change and development. So you can go through the sheer face if you've got ropes and ice axes and things, or you can do what I do and just do a zigzag path up the side of the mountain. And ultimately we end up at the same altitude, which are, in other words, if you're processing the subconscious brain, there is a journey. Now you can go the straight path, which is the center of all of nature, or you can go roundabout the whole lifetime, fiddling around. And the last breath, on your deathbed, go, oh shit, that's what Chris was trying to say. You know, when I was working in Canada, I've been called into environments where people were going to pass and to have been before they left the earth. And it's a very challenging job, but I had great joy in doing it, because I could see a person die in pain, with anguish, with their subconscious to run with love in their heart. I can see some people when they take their last breath, it goes something along those lines. It goes gasp in, and it's basically they're going, as they gasp out, oh fuck, was that what it was all about? And poof, they're dead. So there's the sheer face up the mountain, which is like, oh, I'll get it at the last minute, or there's a zigzag up the side. Either way, you're going to reprogram the subconscious mind to realize that there is another set of rules out here in the universe, another set of rules in life that are different to the ones that you've invented from your childhood, from your experiences, from your education, from the fun you've had, from the corporate training that's been dumped down your throat, from the ridiculous notions that yoga and meditation have introduced into the world. There is another set of rules in the planet that dictate how things work. And when you know those set of rules of how things work, you are in control of the subconscious, because the subconscious is interpreting. Now, if you interpret things from an emotional point of view, you're going to get what? Emotion. If you interpret things from a material point of view, you're going to get what? Material gain and loss. If you interpret things from a religious point of view, you're going to get what? Conditional love. Well, I'm saying that the universal laws of nature, which is what I teach, which is what I'm all about, which is what I stand for, give you an interpretive proposition. The interpretive proposition is, I will dictate to my subconscious brain the process, the powers, and the understanding of how the world works from a universal perspective. Now, if you believe in God, universe and God, it's the same source. If you believe in grace, universe, grace, God, it's the same source. If you believe in inspiration, inspiration, universe, God, grace, it's all the same. Enlightenment, if you believe in enlightenment, it's enlightenment, God, grace. If you believe in unconditional love or anything that is, or even being in the zone in a sport, this is the same conversation. It is the same conversation. These are not multiple variable different states of play. These are one state of play. And most of the teachings that teach people how to get there are emotionally flawed, because they teach them from an emotional values, ethics, moral proposition. And an ethics, moral proposition is a fear-based proposition. All rules, all morals, all ethics are built out of fear. If you read the Ten Commandments, if you go to the Quran, if you go to the Buddhist teaching, all of the precepts, all of the principles, even the Yoga Sutra, are all based on waylaying people's fears. They're all based on fear, on the fear process. So if you want to operate out of an anti-fear process, go to religion. If you want to base your life, your interpretive self, on values proposition, you'll need to go to universal laws, which are untainted, unblemished, and unmucked around with by human beings. Now, these universal laws of nature are stamped on the side of pyramids that existed thousands of years before religion even came to the planet. These are philosophic awarenesses that were generated by people of incredible insight. They were even able to travel without a body outside the realm of the planet and understand where north, south, east and west was, or understand the direction of the pyramid. If you look at the map of a pyramid in Egypt, you'd be just shocked at exactly how accurately those things were built. And there's no other way than to have been transcendent to the physicality of the conscious mind. They have to have been generated from the subconscious. On the sides of those pyramids are stamped the stories of transcendence across the sea, of people walking on water, which would have been interpreted, put in books, and said that there was a real person who walked on water. That is not what it was all about. These stories were on the sides of pyramids. They were metaphors for universal laws. And that's what I'm offering you. I'm offering you an awareness to be able to, invest in the subconscious mind an interpretive proposition that aligns you with a bigger story than emotion, religion, and corporate cultural manipulation. So this opportunity to rise above the subconscious's brainwashed state of being, this is an opportunity, an incredible opportunity say, look what I know. It is a system of creating a statement within you that interprets the world from a completely different proposition than I'm afraid, I'm stressed, I'm scared, I'm enjoying myself, I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm successful, I'm a failure, I'm good, I'm bad, I'm right, I'm better than. It's a completely different proposition. It's a completely different set of principles. It's a completely different set of motives. The motive of the conscious brain is to interpret life from an emotional, structural, material point of view. The conscious brain is trying to understand the way the world goes around from a completely structural point of view. The subconscious is trying to understand the world from a spiritual, from a universal perspective, where it comes back every single time to one single statement. One single statement. There is nothing but unconditional love in the universe. Every single interpretation of the universe that is material, emotional, is a blemish on my subconscious interpretive brain. Now, you have an opportunity here to reprogram your subconscious, to create a state inside you, a state of love, a state of inspiration, a state of grace, a state of enlightenment, a state of inner wealth, in which everything becomes manipulable. Every experience you have becomes changeable. Every experience becomes a witnessing of where you are not in a great state of consciousness. Now that's really important. That's really important, because then you're sitting from truth, you're sitting from soul, you're sitting from the heart, you're sitting from a great state. And from that great state, you can actually drive the bus. The bus is your morals and ethics, the bus is your emotions, the bus is your intelligence, the bus is your relationship, the bus is your dynamic development. And you can play those actions to your heart's content, but you're coming from a really solid, grounded, truthful, unbiased, unadulterated, uncorrupted state, which is the universal law. And this is what I think is really important for you and for others to understand. It's really important for you to make a commitment to the spirit. If you're committed to the truth, that means you're committed to truth. So one great thing to learn when you're walking up a hill in the midst of the Himalayas and then out of your home, you are not at all